Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Because what I want to do now is talk to you about one of the most iconic voices in sport, World Darts, John McDonald. You know, then if you don't know the name, you know his voice. He has officially stepped away from the stage. He has been the voice of these packed arenas. He has announced at the biggest moments of sport that we've ever seen there. And he's always introducing. He sets the tone. He sets the picture. There is no, the only person, in fact, fit to introduce John McDonald to this show is John McDonald himself.
Ladies and gentlemen, for the thousands joining us live,
for the final time, John McDonald, good morning.
Good morning to you, my dear friend.
Do you sound like that at all hours of the day?
No, of course we don't. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where once we've changed, we turn into that person. No, if anybody, and there's lots of people that know me outside the game, no, not at all. But, you know, I don't go around the house demanding my wife to make a cup of tea.
I wish you did.
She's very good at it. I wouldn't say she's the champion of the world.
You might have to say it to get the cup
of
tea.
I have to say it now, yeah.
But come here, congratulations on an incredible career, and you get to leave on your own terms.
Yeah, that's it. You know, that was part of the decision, you know, when is enough. And it's time for somebody new to step in and have the fun that I've had. And I have had some incredible times because, you know, I never started out thinking for one minute that I would ever do this job. I think some of us, you know, I always say to young people, and I wrap myself around youngsters. I think they're just the greatest thing in the world. And I always say to them, you know, you never know where you're going to go. Just keep dreaming. Keep trying. Look back in life and say, I'm glad I tried that. Don't look back in life and say, I wish I tried that. You'd be amazed at what you can do. And I've been the same, and I suppose I'm living proof of it. You know, have a go, see what you think. What's the worst that could happen? I quickly looked it up, and it said, there's never been a sports announcer hanged for doing a terrible job. So I thought, well, what's the worst that can happen then?
Do you actually feel retired at the moment, or is it a bit strange?
Well, I've never done it before. I've always been quite busy. I've always been very, very lucky. If I haven't, and I don't want to sound too patronising, but if I haven't worked, I've always done something. And it doesn't always need to be for money, but I've always kept busy. And I don't want to sort of reel off the kind of things that I do because I always think you sound a bit conceited. I always remember a friend of mine said, the best thing to do is do a good turn and never get caught. And I think that's a better way of going through life. You don't have to tell people what you do in your spare time, and let's hope that it's all good. Yeah. And I've supported a number of great things, and because I've never met a terrible charity. I've always thought they're all good. You know,
I've
never had a phone call and they said to me, "Do you think you could sit?" And I go, "Oh no, I think you're terrible." You know, I've never done that. You know, never.
Why did you decide now is the time to retire? Were things happening in your life? What was the prompt?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's the thing that older people say. They say a couple of silly things, don't they, old people? They say, best times of your life at school. And you think, well, no, they weren't really, to be honest with you. But as you get older, you think, actually, they were. They were pretty good, you know. And then they also say things like, always jump, never be pushed. Mm. And you think, yeah, jump, never be pushed. That's not a bad one. And leave before you get so silly. You know, somebody said that to me. You're going to start forgetting what you're doing. I mean, I already forget what I'm doing, hence why I moved to a bungalow. I was halfway up the stairs at my house. I thought, am I going up or am I coming down? I was sort of in the middle. And then I thought, well, what am I doing anyway? You know, it's a bit. And then I, of course, had the obvious idea. I've got 8 grandchildren. Very, very keen on. Quite a few. 4 sons. They're all married with 2 children, 6 boys and 2 girls. Perfect. All very active in sport, like my sons were.
Yeah.
And one of them phoned me and said, could I come and watch him play football? And I said I couldn't. I was in Leicester. And he said, it's okay. My other granddad, he can do it. And I got a touch, you know, jealousy is a terrible thing, but I got a bit jealous. And I thought, you know, thank goodness that my other granddad, you know, who's a great bloke. I mean, he gives all his time to those children. And he gives all his time to people in sport. He's a cricket umpire. I couldn't think of anything worse, but he loves it. I mean, if, you know, I'd rather watch a tin of paint dry, but he absolutely loves it. And he's a great bloke. And I laugh to it all the time because I get invited to cricket matches and I say, oh, not for me, thanks. I think you better invite somebody that's, you know, that would enjoy it, because I certainly wouldn't. And he always laughs at me and says, well, at least you're honest. But, I, you know, he's a great bloke. And I was very lucky and I got very jealous. And I thought, no, it's time. It's time for me to say, yeah, of course I can come.
So you can go and watch him play football. Darts and cricket fans, not a huge crossover there, unless really fanatical.
No, definitely not. Well, cricket in anything, really. I mean, I'm just not a cricket fan. Although I did go once and had one of the best days of my life.
There you go. I've done the same.
That's the irony of it. Yeah. You know, I'm not dissing it. There's loads of great people out there playing it. I've met some fantastic players and fans, but it's just not for me. I think it's goes back to a very poor infant school I went to, infants junior school, where they only had like one pad, and if you were left-handed, good luck, you know. And really? Never had anything to protect the crown jewels, you know. So yeah, I don't know about that game. It's not for me.
You've been called the voice of darts. How did it begin for you? You come from this world as well, don't you? You were a darts player.
So for me, it was quite an unusual one because I was a press photographer. I had a bad accident when I served in the military and I had to leave. And I had to sort of rebuild a life, really, because it was going to be my career. Mm-hmm. And I took up press photography and I took up photography in sport. And in fact, I do owe a massive debt of gratitude to the great late Huey Russell, who was a great boxer from Northern Ireland, who was also a photographer. Oh, yeah. And I was very friendly with him when he boxed. And I said, look, I think I could do it. And he's like, you've got to do it, you know, specialise in the boxing that you know very well. And I did, and I took his advice, and I took advice from some other friends of mine that I knew were in that business. And I took up the photography, but I just never really felt 100% comfortable doing it. Yeah. I was all okay, and I knew lots of people. I could blag my way quite comfortably, and I did for many years. In fact, I spent about 14 years at the BBC in news and current affairs, travelled the world for them, doing some great stuff. And then I had this feeling that I could do something else mm-hmm. with my life. And because of that, I thought maybe it would be a great idea if I was to look at something a bit different. And I was at the athletics in the morning covering it for the BBC, and I was in the boxing in the evening. And I honestly couldn't understand a word they said. I went to the athletics and they sort of...
In lane one, representing Fraser Harriet. In lane two, representing Fraser. In lane three.
I thought, well, I can hear the in lane bit, but I can't hear what. And then I went to the boxing and it was like, in the blue corner, Smith. In the red corner, Jones. And I was like, really? Really?
Not much of a
can't we just go fighting out of the blue corner wearing the solid white trunks, weighing in at 9 stone and 6 pounds? He brings an undefeated record. He's from Teignmouth in North Devon. Well, no one's ever heard of them places, you know. But I thought, no, come on, let's give it to him. Went away, thought about it, went and auditioned with the British Boxing Board of Control. And luckily, they said, oh, yeah, well, you clearly know what you're talking about. Good luck. Uh-huh. And then that was it. I was off. And
you were a boxer as well? And you knew that sport?
Well, I used to box as an amateur. I wasn't brilliant. In fact, I joined the boxing club because I had a really good football team. I wanted to be a footballer, really. And that's still a great love of mine. And luckily, one of my sons was a professional. And so I followed his career, which was great. We ended up in non-league. We ended up falling through the divisions like a man falling from space. But we ended up non-league football. And I used to go to the wrong ground sometimes when he was out on loan somewhere. You know, I've done all that. And but the boxing, I knew. And once I had my accident, I could never take part in sport, really. It was a bit dangerous for me. And I thought, well, maybe I can do something else. And the boxing announcing seemed to get me close enough without getting a smack in the mouth. So I thought, well, this is a good job for
Very
me.
Good. So you essentially brought the kind of American-style atmosphere of the announcer to British sport.
I'd been there and I'd seen it. I'd been to America very early in my photography career. Yeah. I'd always wanted to go to Las Vegas, and I got a pen pal over there, and I sort of wrote to him and said, look, I've got to come over and try and sort of at least cover a fight. And then I went in to see Bob Arum in his office and span him some yarn about being the greatest boxing photographer in the world and could I cover this fight? And he's like, yeah, sure. And I did. And I came back to England with this whole new idea of how it should be done. I watched the Michael Buffers of the world and I thought, you know, here's a guy that can make 10,000 Mexicans throw their sombreros into the air. Yeah. Surely I can do something at the York or Bethnal Green. It might be a bag of chips or something, but, you know, I can get them going somehow. And that was the dream. And you know, and I did that for over 30 years. And the darts really came about because of the boxing. They had a pay-per-view event. That's right, it was boxing first. And I did lots of other things from boxing as well. I got involved in the snooker and the pool and the billiards and all kinds of different sports started to come around and I became sort of the voice of sport, really. I like to think that the minute you see me, you know something good's going to happen like that, because once I've gone, it's up to them to perform, you know. I was lucky. I worked with some great sportsmen, Ronnie O'Sullivan. I mean, you know, he doesn't need an introduction, but when he gets one, he brings the house down.
Yeah.
And boxers, you know, like I did all AJ's pro debut and stuff like that. I did Eubank in the Nile, on the banks of the Nile in Egypt. And, you know, this stuff it's just, it's mind-blowing when I think back over the career. I did Justin Juco in Black Star Square in Uganda. I was the only white person in the arena, let alone in the country. and then machine gun fire started, and I said to the supervisor, who was a Kenyan, I said, what's happening? He said, well, I think the police are shooting the army, trying to get in for free. I said, I'll buy their tickets, let them in. Let's stop all this shooting, can we? This is ridiculous.
It's extraordinary.
It is.
There's a lovely message in here that says your voice was like the haka for darts fans.
Yeah, that's quite nice, isn't it? Because once they start that haka, you know you're in trouble, don't you? I mean, once that all black team starts that haka, you know you better pull your socks up. Yeah.
Fear. You were great friends with Barry McGuigan.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I still am. I still am. I speak to Barry on a regular basis. And of course, I was very lucky. I covered Barry's world title fight at QPR. At Loftus Road, and Barry and I are similar age, in fact, just a few months apart. And we've, you know, Barry based himself in London after the sort of career was very near the end. He came and lived over here, and I saw a lot more of him. But I went to the King's Hall, and I went to Kelvin Hall, and I watched him box. And then I was at his world title fight at Loftus Road, which was positioned perfectly because most of the Irish population in London live around that area, so the place was packed, and it was one of the greatest sporting boxing memories of my life when Barry lifted that title. It was just the most magical night, and Barry still remains one of my closest friends, and we speak to each other on a regular basis. In fact, his son, who's doing so well in the boxing training, and myself were both inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame the same day, so Barry was there to witness that.
You're in the Hall of Fame in boxing and in darts.
And in darts, yeah.
You're a two-time Hall of Famer.
Two-time Hall of Famer. So if you look it up, there's me and Ozzy Osbourne. He's a two-time. He's in the World Wrestling Federation's Hall of Fame. I never knew he wrestled.
Really?
And he's in the Music Hall of Fame. And Paul McCartney's in it twice. He's in it for the Beatles. Yeah. And he's in it for Paul McCartney. So John McDonald's in there. There we are. A little kid out of southwest London that can't read and write. How about that?
Your final job as darts MC was presenting this extraordinary talent, Luke Littler, World Championship. That was an incredible moment for you to round off your career.
It's unbelievable when you think, in all my career, I've met some incredible sportsmen in every sport. Yeah. Really fantastic people. I've never met anybody like this lad.
Really?
Even when he was like 11 years old, the PDC decided it would be a really good idea for the youth under the JDC, the Junior Professional Darts Corporation, the junior section, that their finals were to be held at our events. And so their families could come along and see them on the big stage. And then we said, well, why don't we do it? You know, why don't Russ Bray referee it? And why doesn't Scott Giblin and Andrew Davis mark it? And then why don't I bring them on, these 11-year-old kids? And I remember having this Luke Littler kid. He was a tiny little fella, very shy but very confident. And
really?
I got to know him. And then, you know, as strange as this story may sound, 3 years ago, he played in a JDC final at the World Championship, and there was nobody in the building apart from both sets of parents of the two players, these two lads, and Luke was one of them. Luke won that match, and he came off the stage. It was empty inside the Alexandra Palace, empty, not a person in the building.
Yeah.
It was three doors, and I said, Luke, one day you'll play here and this will be packed with people. And he said, yeah, Wednesday, I've qualified for this year's World Championship. Now, that showed my naivety. You know, I was like, have you? Do you? I mean, I don't remember seeing your name. And I'm looking along the list of, you know, you can imagine, I mean, we've got 128 players now. I mean, it's, you know, honestly, there's flight manifests and smaller than this, you know. And he said, yeah, I'm playing. And I walked off, and I remember saying to myself, it would be a miracle if this 16-year-old kid won a match. Wouldn't that be something? I said to myself. And then he's in the final, and I'm like, which he very nearly won. I mean, yeah. You know, he'd been in the last 3 years since he turned pro, he's been in three finals, 1-2, and was a runner-up. I mean, it's nobody has ever done this, ever, and are likely never to do it again. I mean, he is just an incredible person and a most wonderful, kind man. So much for people, stays behind afterwards, signs all them kids' autographs.
Yeah.
Just a lovely, lovely family guy. His parents and his brothers and family are just beautiful people, you know, and it's just so lovely to be around him. I'm so pleased I got started. And
to think that he's only 19 in 2 weeks' time. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. It really is. I mean,
I want people to hear, who anyone missed it, you introducing Luke at the final of the World Darts just the weekend past.
Ladies and gentlemen, a Premier League champion, the reigning and defending champion.
I love the crowd joining in.
Yeah, they just love it. They can't keep up, can they? When I do the champion of the world, it's like that beautiful song, Lovely Day. It's a lovely day. Nobody could ever do it. They all try it in their cars, don't they? They all try to keep up. They all try to say champion of the world as long as me. I do it on purpose.
It's very long.
People rip their chest and fall on the floor before, you know, trying to do it.
It must be circular breathing. You could play the didgeridoo with the the special thing about the weekend gone is your wife was there, and does she go often to see you?
Never. She never comes. She's been to the boxing once. She came to the boxing once. The boxer got cut, and I could hear her shouting, "Stop the fight! He's cut." No. My wife's never mixed business with pleasure. She's been the backbone of my life. She's looked after our four wonderful children. She worked in mental health nursing. She worked so hard. She would cycle off to work at 6 a.m, cycle back at 7, 8 at night, feed the children, look after them, run them all over the country with football and golf and boxing and you name it, they did it. And I could never have done any of this without my wife. I mean, you know, that's the massive part of the reason why I wanted to retire. I owe her this. I owe her it. You know, there's so many of us out there. We get caught up in this cocoon. We're always thinking about ourselves. We never think of how these things happen. And occasionally you have to look back and go, well, you know what? My wife's a good person, you know. Without her, I couldn't have done this. And I really couldn't. I mean, she's nursed me to fitness in times of stress and strain. She's been like, really, I couldn't have done it. Honestly, I really couldn't.
Gorgeous for you to say that. And of course,
I'm just so proud of her, you know. I mean, it's just, oh.
What's her name, John?
Sharon. Sharon, she's the star of my life. Yeah, I'd be lost without her. I openly admit that, live on air.
You have a great sense of community spirit, and of course you grew up with Irish connections and among Irish families in London. Tell us about your connection to here.
So my dad was from Ireland, and he was like so many men that came over, you know, at the end of the war and tried to start a life in the UK. He didn't have a great time, and I remember when I was very young going home with him and being pushed from one house to another and sleeping on settees and top and tailing with people I'd never met in my life, you know, a typical Irish way. I remember once our van didn't work, so one of the other families in the road was going, but they were going to travel on from Dublin, so we had to get some buses. So we all went over in this transit van, and I remember waking up in somewhere like Wales where we were going to get the ferry, and my dad and this guy saying, two adults only, and I thought, there's about nine kids in the back of this van, you know, all under a mattress hiding. And the guy said, yeah, go on through, mate, go on, off you go. Just two adults, you know, and we get to the other end and the customs would just wave and we'd be on our travels, you know.
He's from Wexford.
So he was just outside Wexford, yeah. And I've been back many times, tried to trace the sort of the ancestries. It's a difficult one, isn't it, with there's so many of us plastic paddies out there. We're all so proud of Ireland and we're always banging on about it, but none of us seem to do anything about it. You know, I mean, I love these Americans that say, oh, I'm from Cork. And I go, well, you're not really, are you, mate? You're from New York, you know, but your great-grandfather came over and I suppose that makes you as much a paddy as me, I don't know.
Listen, our whole tourism industry is based on those Brad O'Shaughnessys.
So it should be because, very welcome. You know, I come every year.
Oh.
And I still have some of the strangest things happen to me. I wanted to go and see where Saving Private Ryan was filmed because I've got an old picture of that beach with me on it. And I'm the only person on it. My dad must have took me. I've got a pair of shorts on and I'm the only person for a million miles, you know. Oh, wow. And then they said, it's where they filmed Saving Private Ryan. So I went there to see it. And I pull up in the car park and a guy comes over and he says, I wouldn't be leaving that big motorhome there, he said, because it's a bit busy corner, this. He said, if you go a little bit further up, he said, past my house. He said, my house is opposite the Stone Massage. He said, you'll see my house. He said, I used to teach in London. He said, I know how difficult it is for you when you're over. Go up there, and it's a car park. He said, when you've finished, come and have a cup of tea with me in the
house.
You know? And I said to my wife, you know this guy means this, right? And she's like, I've never met friendlier people. Why do we live in England? And I was like, well, you know, that's exactly how it is. And we saw him again, and I said, sorry, I've run out of time. You know, oh, don't worry.
You don't have time for tea.
Come and see me, you know. And it's like that, isn't it? And I remember my lights wouldn't turn off, and this guy came over, and he said, hey, it's all right, I'll soon have that. And he got some spanners out, and the next thing I know, it was fixed.
Amazing.
Isn't Ireland just the greatest place? Eagle Point. We went to Eagle Point in Cork, one of the most beautiful, rugged, wild Atlantic coast you'll ever see. I mean, the Irish Tourist Board are missing a trick. Go and film down there and show us back in this country how wonderful it is. It's the most beautiful place. And we was down there. We had just such a great holiday. We always do. We've been so many times.
And you've loads of time for holidays now. Someone's actually trying to ring you, John. So that's a sign for me to let you go as well. I can hear the beep coming through. Have people texting in to let us go. If you could say... They want you to say 180 in your
heroic
tones.
That. Do you know, I never ever say that. I never say that because I'm not a referee, but I have had to say it. And you know, they've got there's some great 180s out there with these referees. But if I was to do a 180, I'd go like this. 180.
Absolutely love it. Thanks so much, John McDonald. It's
God
been a pleasure.
You.
Happy retirement. Enjoy yourself.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye now.